Jeremiah chapter 10. This chapter, as we talked about last week, is about idols. Jeremiah, this was, of course, a huge issue with Jeremiah because it was a huge issue with God. Because Judah was going to be taken into captivity because of idolatry. So that's why Jeremiah's message over and over and over again here in the first few chapters has been about idols. And we got down, let's go back and start with verse 6 and then we'll read down to verse 10. Kind of catch up. Jeremiah 10 verse 6. Inasmuch as there is none like you, O Lord, you are great and your name is great in might. Who would not fear you, O King of the nations? For this is your rightful due. For among all the wise men of the nations and in all their kingdoms there is none like you. But they're altogether dull-hearted and foolish. A wooden idol is a worthless doctrine. Silver is beaten into plates, it's brought from Tarshish, and gold from Uphaz, the work of the craftsman and of the hands of the metalsmith. Blue and purple are their clothing, they're all the work of skillful men. But the Lord is the true God, He's the living God and the everlasting King. At His wrath the earth will tremble and the nations will not be able to endure His indignation. Jeremiah says that God is the only one worthy of reverence. And He's worthy of reverence by the entire world. All the nations, all the kingdoms should be revering and worshiping God. But they are not. Even though He's the only true, living, eternal God, people are throughout the world worshiping idols. As He calls them, there were wooden idols. He says they're worthless. He says the people and the idols are dull-hearted and foolish. In other words, we would use the word stupid today because that's what it meant back then. Idols are stupid. He says you take silver and you beat them into plates and gold and the craftsmen and the metalsmiths, you know, they decorate the idols and make them look beautiful and then you worship them. And you're the one that made them. Why would you worship something that you made that is powerless? They have no ability to do anything for you. You're the one that made them. You went out into the woods and you cut down the tree and then you trimmed it and shaped it into an idol. And you're the one that took the gold and silver and you put it on the idols and the blue and purple. You made these idols. Why would you worship them? Yes.
It's the same thing in 1 Timothy. People have a form of godliness, but not.
Yeah.
They knew they ought to worship something.
That's right.
They did the
wrong thing.
Power.
That's right. There wasn't any power. That's a good analogy. There was no. It was a form. It was a form of worship. This is the wrong thing, and people still today are worshiping the wrong thing. They worship all kinds of wrong things, just about everything imaginable. And just like Jeremiah said, the one God you should be worshiping, you're not. And he says he's the living God, the true God, the everlasting King. And he says, at his wrath the earth will tremble. See, none of the idols or any of these other things have any power. And I mean, and that's true today. People that that follow Buddhism or Islam or any of those types, they don't have any power. Joseph Smith, in Mormonism, doesn't have any power. So none of them have power. There's only one true living God, Jeremiah says, and He's the one you should be concerned about. That's what he says. He's the one that should make you sit up and think. Unfortunately, that's not happened. Like he says in verse 11, thus you shall say to them, the gods that have not made the heavens and the earth shall perish from the earth and from under these heavens. These idols did not make the world. And that's true today. People that worship Allah or follow Buddha or whoever, they didn't make the world. They didn't create the heavens. They didn't create the earth. Only one God created the heavens and the earth. Jeremiah said, verse 12, He has made the earth by His power. He has established the world by his wisdom and has stretched out the heavens at his discretion. When he utters his voice, there's a multitude of waters in the heavens, and he causes the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He makes lightning for the rain. He brings the wind out of his treasuries. Jeremiah says, when you look out into the world, you see what the true God has done. He created the heavens and the earth out of nothing at all. As he said, he stretched out the heavens at his discretion. In other words, he made the world just exactly like he wanted to make it. He made the earth like he wanted to make it. He made the stars and the other planets and the galaxies. He made everything just like he wanted to. And he says he's established it by his wisdom. In other words, this is the perfect world for what God wanted it to be. I mean, this is the absolute perfect world. Everything about the heavens and the earth, for the purpose that God made them, it's perfect. Absolutely perfect. And all he had to do was say it when he uttered his voice. So that's all it took. See, and these people had to go out and cut down a tree and trim it and shape metal, gold and silver, and make the idol beautiful. They had to go do that, and it's not even really a God. Whereas the true God, all he had to do was just say it. And he brought it into existence. And he says God's able to cause the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He makes lightning for rain. He makes the wind. So when the people looked out into the world, when they saw these things, you know, the thunder, lightning, rain, wind, God is the one behind it. And there's so many places, I've got so many verses written down here that refer, you know, to God making the heavens and making the rain and making all these things. Let's read just a few of them. We won't read them all. There's so many. Let's start with Psalm 24. And if we'll go back there, and if someone would read the first two verses, Psalm 24, verses 1 and 2. That'll be our first one, Psalm 24, verses 1 and 2.
The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. For he founded it upon the seas and established it upon the waters.
Look what God did. First of all, David, this is supposed to be a Psalm of David. Everything is the Lord's. And everything is the Lord's because he made it. He's the one that founded it. He's the one that established it. He's the one that made it. He's the one that created it. And there wasn't anything there to start with. He made it all out of absolutely nothing. You know, that lesson we had here a week or two ago, he from Genesis 1:1, he created it out of nothing. There wasn't anything there. It was just like empty. And then he made everything. That's the kind of power that he has. Let's go to a couple of places in Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 40. And then we'll go to Isaiah 42. So Isaiah 40, verse 22. Isaiah 40, verse 22. If someone would read that. Okay.
It is he that sitteth upon the circle of the earth, and the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers, that stretcheth out the heavens as a curtain, and spreadeth them out as a tent to dwell in.
Okay. God is the one who sits above the circle of the earth. It's like he's the one above looking down upon everything. And of course, we look like grasshoppers to him. And we do, of course. And we have the same picture. He stretches out the heavens like a curtain. You know, I mean, that's all he had to do. He just stretched out the heavens and made it as far as we can see. He made it all just like that. Then we go over to Isaiah 42. This time, verse 5. Someone would read that for us. Isaiah 42:5.
Thus saith God the Lord, he that created the heavens and stretched them out, he that spread forth the earth, and that which cometh out of it. He that giveth breath unto the people upon it, and the spirit to them that walk therein.
See, it's God that gives us breath, gives us life. He's the one that gave us the spirit, our soul. He's the one that did that. And then, let's see, one other. Let's go back to Psalms for the last one. Psalm 33, this time verse 7. Psalm 33, verse 7. I mean, we could fill the whole hour reading verses like this that talk about various aspects of His power.
He gathers the waters of the sea together as a heap. He lays up the deep in storehouses.
God's the one that has made all the waters like they are. He's the one that gave us water, period. He's the one that gave us the water cycle. He's the one that did all of that. And again, there's so many other verses that says the same thing, adds, different powers. But we see just from those that we see God's wisdom. You know, we see it in the rain cycle. We see it in all of these various aspects. You know, how we get rain and all of that. So, going back now to verses 14 and 15, Jeremiah says, "Everyone is dull-hearted without knowledge. Every metalsmith is put to shame by an image. For his molded image is falsehood, and there's no breath in them. They are futile, a work of errors. In the time of their punishment, they shall perish." Again, he's saying, look, there's no life in these things. You've got a dead piece of wood. You've got gold and silver, which aren't alive, period. He says the molded image is a lie. It's not really a god. There isn't anything in them. They're futile. They have no real purpose or power. He says they're a work of error. It's a mistake, if you want to call it that, to make idols and worship them. Why would people do that? And then he says, "The portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the maker of all things," referring to Jehovah, "and Israel is the tribe of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name." Let's go ahead and read the next two verses. "Gather up your wares from the land, O inhabitant of the fortress, for thus says the Lord, behold, I will throw out at this time the inhabitants of the land, and will distress them that they may find it so." The portion of Jacob. Remember, Jacob is here again referring to the Israelites. And it says, he is the maker of all things. God is the maker of it all. Israel is the tribe of his inheritance. I mean, that was the chosen people for centuries. And he says, "I will throw out at this time the inhabitants of the land and will distress them." Talking about the coming of the captivity, coming of the punishment, the coming of the Babylonians to Jerusalem. He says, "I'm going to throw them out. Throw them into captivity. Because they have worshipped idols. They've gone after false gods. That's why he is doing it." So he says, "Woe is me for my hurt. My wound is severe. But I say, truly this is an infirmity and I must bear it." This is Jeremiah talking about himself. "My tent is plundered and all my cords are broken. My children have gone from me and they're no more. There's no one to pitch my tent anymore or set up my curtains. For the shepherds have become dull-hearted and have not sought the Lord. Therefore they shall not prosper, and all their flocks shall be scattered. Behold, the noise of the report has come, and a great commotion out of the north country, to make the cities of Judah desolate, a den of jackals." There again is the north country. That's, they're coming in from the north, into Judah and Jerusalem to destroy the city, the walls, the temple, to take people into captivity. Now, he says, you know, God is, his design, he is not just punishing Israel. He wants Israel to learn a lesson from it. And that's what it's all about. He's wanting them to learn that they've got to get rid of idolatry. In other words, he's sending the Babylonians, he's sending them into captivity, the Israelites, to try and drive out idolatry from them. That's the point of all of this. He wants them to learn from this. He wants them to learn something from this. And it's going to be a costly lesson. Like he says, my children have gone from me, they're no more. There's no one to pinch my tent, set up my curtains. You know, it's going to be a time of desolation. You know, Jerusalem is going to be knocked down, the walls knocked down, the temple destroyed. All these things that Israel cherished is going to be gone. But God is still wanting them to learn a lesson from it. And one of the problems was the shepherds, the people who were supposed to be leading Israel, were dull-hearted. They've not sought the Lord. In other words, they hadn't gone after what God wanted them to do. You know, the prophets, the priests, and so forth. And so the consequence is all their flocks shall be scattered. You know, they're going to be sent off into captivity like Daniel and his three friends, like Ezekiel. You know, all they're going to be sent off into Babylonian captivity. So he says they're all going to be scattered. And the noise has come and it's going to be a great commotion. And obviously that's exactly what's going to happen. It is going to be a great commotion. So Jeremiah says, O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. And really, this is kind of the point of the entire book up to this point, up to this place in the book, is that man, left by himself, doesn't know how to live. You know, so many people in our world today, you know, say, man is intelligent enough, he knows how to direct his life, he knows how to live properly. No, he has no idea. And that's what Jeremiah says. Man, yeah, exactly, yeah, and that's the way it was back then, and that's what Jeremiah says. Man, left to his own devices, is just going to go downhill. Man needs God, in other words. He needs to have God to direct him, to instruct him in how to live. He can't do it on his own. That's what Jeremiah is saying. He just can't do it. He needs Jehovah to direct his steps, in other words. So he finishes this chapter, and that's where we'll probably end here. O Lord, correct me, but with justice. Not in your anger, let you bring me to nothing. Pour out your fury on the Gentiles who do not know you, and on the families who do not call on your name, for they have eaten up Jacob, devoured him, and consumed him, and made his dwelling place desolate. Jeremiah says, I know we, the people, need correction. But do so, you might say, not fully. In other words, don't completely wipe us out. Do so justly, not in your anger, because we know with your power that you can wipe us completely out. So Jeremiah is saying, you know, don't do that, God. Just punish us enough to bring about the desired result. And the desired result is to drive out idolatry. So Jeremiah says, pour out your fury on the Gentiles. In other words, pour out your wrath and anger on these other nations as well, you know, that like the Babylonians or the Assyrians or whomever. He says, they have eaten up Jacob. In other words, they have devoured God's people. So there's no doubt that Babylon would have been just fine by completely wiping out Israel. But Jeremiah is asking God, don't let that happen. That's what he's saying. Don't let this completely destroy us. Jeremiah knows that the nation needs correction, the nation needs punishment, but he's begging God, don't go past that. Just enough punishment and correction, you know, to drive out idolatry so that the people would once again, you know, follow Jehovah. And that's what he's, I guess you can use the word begging, pleading for. That's what he wants. And we'll see that that's basically what happened. You know, after the 70 years of captivity, when, you know, Ezra and Nehemiah come back and start rebuilding Jerusalem and the walls and everything, and eventually the temple, that they're really never considered to be idolaters again. And so for the most part, that punishment, the captivity, drives out at least most of the idolatry in most of the people. So, all right, next week we'll, Lord willing, talk a little bit about the covenant and how God's people broke it and what God was going to do about it there in chapter 11.